You see, there's lots of different people who we might believe about the things of God, and different people say different things. So on the one hand, maybe you've got people like the Apostle Paul, who wrote a lot of what we have in the Bibles, in the New Testament part of our Bibles, the Apostle Paul. On the other hand, you've got people like Philip Pullman, who we've been referring to throughout this series, who wrote The Good Man Jesus and The Scoundrel Christ. Philip Pullman says very different things to what's written in the Bible. Pullman says that Jesus was just a good man who did and said many good things, but certainly wasn't the Christ that the Bible had promised. He certainly wasn't God himself, and he certainly didn't rise from the dead. So who will we believe? Will we believe Paul, or will we believe Pullman? Which of them will we believe, and which of them will we chuck in the bin? Or between those two extremes, there are many, many other writers and speakers and leaders. You've got Karen Armstrong, for example, former nun, who in her History of God suggests that our ideas of God have been shaped by mankind down through the ages, so we can't really know anything about God for sure. Or John Stott, more familiar to lots of us maybe, one of the most influential evangelical Christian writers and leaders over the past 50 years. We could add many others, people like Rick Warren, who wrote A Purpose-Driven Life, or W.P. Young, who wrote The Shack, or many, many others. How do we know who to believe and who to bin? Well, that's exactly what the Apostle Paul wanted to teach the leaders of the church in Ephesus, which is a town in modern-day Turkey, as he spoke to their leaders in this Bible passage that Ruth just read for us. He tells them that he knows two things. In verse 25, he tells them that he knows they won't see him again. And in verse 29, he tells them that he knows that after he leaves, savage wolves will come in among them. False leaders, in other words, will come in among them. It would have been a very emotional occasion, I guess, for this man who had started the church in Ephesus and had nurtured it and given everything to it over 3 years, to know that he's not going to see them again and that savage wolves are going to come in among them. So his aim in the farewell speech that we're looking at today is to equip them to know who to believe. The bulk of his speech sets out the pattern of true ministry as he defends his own life and ministry so that they'll stick with it and stick with ministry that follows the same pattern in the future. And he also warns them about the pattern of false ministry. So let's look at the speech under those two headings. And first of all, the pattern of true ministry. I wonder how you decide who to believe. In fact, why don't we just take 30 seconds, turn to the person next to you and tell them how you decide who to believe about the things of God. Okay, 30 seconds. Okay, I think that's probably long enough. Sorry, you've probably only just started those conversations. I wonder whether you said that you tend to believe people who have the right credentials. Maybe great qualifications or titles in the church hierarchy. Maybe you tend to believe people who use persuasive arguments. Maybe you listen to people that other people listen to. Or I suspect lots of us aren't really very sure about how we decide who we listen to. It's just maybe a gut instinct thing. Surprisingly, Paul doesn't talk about his credentials here in this speech to the leaders of Ephesus. He doesn't tell us that he was taught by the Pharisees or that he met with Jesus on the road to Damascus, although he does tell us about those things in next week's passage. But here, Paul lays out to his fellow Christians the pattern of true ministry and focuses on his conduct and his teaching. First of all, he talks about his conduct, and that's down in verses 18 and 19 in particular. Let's look at that again. Verse 18, he said to them, "You know how I lived the whole time I was with you, from the first day I came into the province of Asia. I served the Lord with great humility and with tears, although I was severely tested by the plots of the Jews." Notice that his conduct has been public and consistent. They know all about it. He's lived alongside them for 3 years. They've got to know him personally very well. He's not in it for fame. You see, he's not the sort of celebrity preacher or leader who might jet in and do his stuff and then zoom off again without giving anyone a chance to get to know him. And notice the way that he kept going, even through persecution and suffering. The very fact that they aren't going to see him again is because he's off to Jerusalem, where he knows that he's going to suffer. He tells them that in verses 22 to 24. He's not in it for personal comfort. And unlike many leaders and writers, he's not in it for the money either. He says over in verses 33 and 34, do you see there? He says, "I've not coveted anyone's silver or gold or clothing. You yourselves know that these hands of mine have supplied my own needs and the needs of my companions." Do you see, they know that he's not in it for the money. So who will we believe? Let's not be blinded by people's credentials. Instead, let's look at the conduct of the people that we're listening to. Paul says, so the pattern of true ministry is humble, enduring suffering, generous. But it's not just about conduct, it's also about teaching. And actually, this is one long sentence that's been broken up in our English translation here. But verse 20, he continues what we just read and says, "You know that I have not hesitated to preach anything that would be helpful to you, but have taught you publicly and from house to house. I've declared to both Jews and Greeks that they must turn to God in repentance and have faith in our Lord Jesus." So his teaching, like his conduct, is public and consistent. They know that he hasn't hesitated or shrunk back from teaching anything that would be profitable to them. He hasn't picked and chosen what he thought they wanted to hear. He hasn't held back on the things that will be hard to hear or that might threaten his reputation. He's taught the same message in public and in private. He's taught indiscriminately both Jews and Greeks without partiality. So who will we believe? Will it be the Apostle Paul and people like him who are consistent in public and private in their conduct and in their teaching? Even as Paul sets out for us the pattern of true ministry, he's echoing the true ministers who have gone before him. So I don't know if you noticed in verse 26, he says, "I declare to you today that I am innocent of the blood of all men." Now that might sound strange to us. We might even think about Paul's role in persecuting the church before he became a Christian himself. But actually, he's referring back to the prophet Ezekiel in the Old Testament. In Ezekiel 3, he's told that he's a watchman to the people of Israel. If he passes on God's warnings to them, then he's innocent of their blood, whether they take notice of the warnings or not. But if he's a watchman that doesn't pass on God's warnings to them, then he's responsible for their blood. So Paul says that like Ezekiel, he is innocent of the blood of all men because he's passed on God's message to them, God's warnings to them. And actually there are echoes throughout this speech of other farewell speeches in the Bible. Moses' words in Deuteronomy chapter 8. Samuel's words in 1 Samuel 12. there are echoes throughout the speech of true ministry across the whole of the Bible. Paul refers to the church as a flock and its leaders as shepherds, which is imagery that's used throughout the Bible of God's people and their leaders, sheep and shepherds. It causes us, I suppose, to think of the ultimate good shepherd, who is Jesus Christ. There are close parallels between Paul's trip to Jerusalem and his farewell speech to the next generation of leaders, and Jesus's trip to Jerusalem and his farewell speech to his disciples at the Last Supper and in the Garden of Gethsemane. You see, there's one pattern of true ministry throughout the whole Bible, and it's of consistent conduct and teaching. And as we make up our minds what to believe about the things of God, we've got good reason to believe God's messengers who are recorded here in the Bible. Let's believe them first and foremost. We've got good reason to believe them. And we need to test our leaders and our writers today against the pattern that's set out here. Now, they'll all have their weaknesses, but do they basically match up to the pattern of true ministry that we find here? So that's the pattern of true ministry. But in some ways, it will be harder to know who not to listen to. Some of us, you see, will just be happy to listen to anyone. But Paul wants to warn us, doesn't he? Because he knows that savage wolves are coming in among them. False leaders are coming in among them to lead them astray. So let's go on to look at the pattern of false ministry. He says in verse 29, I know that after I leave, savage wolves will come in among you and will not spare the flock. Now imagine the horror of wolves in a first century sheep-keeping community. You've got your flock of sheep, which you've bred and fed and protected and grown over many, many years, maybe. And imagine the damage that wolves can do in minutes to that flock of sheep that you've invested in. That's how we're meant to feel about the wolves that come in among the flock of God's people. It's verse 30 that comes as a particular shock, though, isn't it? Verse 30. Even from your own number, men will arise and distort the truth in order to draw away disciples after them. Even from your own number. And who is Paul speaking to? He's speaking to the leaders of the church. He's speaking to people that he's personally selected and trained over 3 years as leaders of the church. Isn't that shocking? You see, what we're dealing with here isn't wolves in sheep's clothing, it's wolves in shepherd's clothing. The real danger to the church isn't from people like Philip Pullman. You see, Philip Pullman is on the record as saying, I'm trying to undermine the basis of Christian belief. We know where he's coming from. The wolves won't say that. They will sound very orthodox. The real danger to the church is from people with impeccable credentials. You don't get better credentials than being personally selected and trained by an apostle, do you? The wolves in our churches today will be people in leadership positions. They might be ordained and wear a dog collar. They might well be leading home groups or Sunday school classes or be on the church council. They may be trained at just the right colleges. They might have letters after their names or be published writers. And notice that they will distort the truth. That's what Paul says, isn't it? They will distort the truth. People like Philip Pullman deny the truth head on. They're easy to spot. But wolves will sound very orthodox, won't they? What they teach won't necessarily be untrue at all. So instead, they will make secondary issues primary. They'll emphasise certain truths at the expense of others. Or maybe they'll defend ungodly behaviour with plausible biblical arguments. We need to grasp the subtlety of the wolf. Presumably, some of the pattern of true ministry will be absent from their ministry. Rather than their conduct and teaching being consistent and public, maybe they'll say different things in public and in private. Maybe they'll be proud rather than humble. Maybe they'll enjoy fame or comfort or money a little bit too much. But from the fact that they manage to get in amongst the leaders of the church, we have to expect that they'll be very, very plausible. They won't just have great credentials, they'll be personally very persuasive, whether through charm or through force of personality. And they will draw away disciples after themselves. That's what Paul says, isn't it? That's their aim, and that will be one danger sign. If we see a leader in church life starting to gather around them a little group of disciples who start to look to them as their leader, who start to divide the church into those that follow him and those that don't. Three implications. First, be careful who you believe. Be careful who you believe. As Paul puts it in verse 31, be on your guard. Don't just slip into thinking that everyone who has impressive credentials must be right. Don't follow the crowd. Don't trust your gut instinct. Be careful who you believe. Look at the pattern of true ministry that's laid out here and all over the Bible by the prophets and the apostles and by Jesus himself. Their ministry was true. So let's listen first and foremost to them and not to Philip Pullman or to anyone else. Let's test everyone else by what's said in the Bible, by the ministry of the true leaders. Let's be very careful about listening to leaders today. Don't take my word for anything I say here on a Wednesday lunchtime. Test what I say by what's written in the Bible. And look at my conduct as well. Does it basically match up with what I say and what the Bible says? Do the same with leaders of your own churches. Not just the main pastor, but also others with influence in the church. Do the same with the writers you read. Do the same with your Christian friends who might have been explaining the Christian message to you. Remember the subtlety of the wolf and be very, very careful. Secondly, though, be slow to cry wolf. Be slow to cry wolf. You see, our temptation will be to look at a Bible passage like this and think about all the leaders in church life who we've had issues with and think, aha, I wonder if he's a wolf. But what does Paul say we need to do in verse 28? He says, keep watch over yourselves and all the flock. You see, let's keep watch over ourselves first. If we're in leadership roles especially, let's examine our own conduct and our motivations and our consistency. I don't think any of the leaders in Ephesus set out to be wolves. I think they may well have started with good motives. They may have had good gospel reasons for starting to emphasize certain Bible truths over others. They might have thought they had strong ministry reasons to start to gather disciples around them personally. I suspect all of us have some wolfish tendencies. So let's examine our own hearts and our own ministries before we point the finger too quickly at others. Let's realise that what starts with good motives may well end up destroying the flock. And please pray for your leaders. Encourage them to keep on preaching and teaching anything that will be helpful, even if it's very hard to hear. Now maybe you're starting to feel like you can't trust anyone. People might let us down, but there is one who will never let us down. And verse 32 tells us about him. This is our third implication. Verse 32, now I commit you to God and to the word of his grace, which can build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified. So be committed to God and to his word. You see, we can trust the Apostle Paul and the writers of the other parts of the Bible. The Bible might be hard to understand. We might need others' help to explain it to us. But there is objective truth here that is able to keep us strong and keep us going to the end. So let's not be paralysed about who we listen to, distrusting everyone. We aren't victims of our leaders. We aren't just passive pew fodder who just need to believe or reject what we're told. We need to commit ourselves to God and to the word of his grace. We need to take some responsibility for getting to know the Bible ourselves. We need to test what our leaders and our writers tell us against it. We need to use it to encourage one another. And God will build us up and give us a wonderful inheritance.